Welcome to Turning Point. I'm Scott Catoon, and keep me honest, today is my co-host Anne Marie. As always, we've got a great show for you today. Joining us is our friend from Tasty Trade, Tony Batista.
Thank you for having me.
I cannot believe how excited I am. I'm not even kidding. Like, you're a legend in Chicago.
You should tell my wife because when I go home, I have to take out the garbage just
like
everybody
else. Wait, what was the quote that I saw? Yeah, that's what you said in your thing. You said, oh, that was hilarious.
Well, he's growing in my mind. He bought me a coffee the first time I saw him, so I mean,
oh, yeah,
you know,
that's
cheers.
Fantastic.
This is great.
Little incremental movement is all we try to do. So, try to
you guys are awesome. Like, you are what we are going to attempt to make Turning Point.
Oh, no, we're going to do it.
We are going to do it. Yeah, that's fair.
You got a great studio. You guys are great at this. I've listened to a couple of your podcasts.
Awesome.
They're very interesting. It's fun.
One of the funny things is we've had, I think, one other person on here who's kind of been in the podcast or had a show of their own type of thing. And usually, you know, obviously people are a little bit gun shy about being on, whether it's camera or talking or whatever.
Well, that's nerve-wracking.
Not for you, but for
me. When I was on Tasty Trade, I was.
I feel like
Jules. Like, what am I supposed to expect?
I feel like when we have people like you on the show, it's you have to step your game. I have to step my game up a little bit and try to like whatever. But there's something about it that just makes for the best shows because everyone kind of knows what they're doing, and you can. I feel like we can have a conversation about sort of your journey and all these things, and this is going to be a good show. I can just.
Well,
tell
did you go to school for this? I mean, is this something?
I went to Northwestern. I got two masters at Northwestern. One of them was
in. That's why the game is on.
That's why the game is on right now. Literally,
I can see.
It's 0-0.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's fine. But the media management program, so like I literally did everything except for on camera, on radio, on whatever. That was the one thing I was like, I'll just pick it up if I'm going to do it.
Right.
And so then, you know, when I ended up doing it, I guess, I don't know.
We just had this sweetheart named Peyton on our show, I think 2 weeks ago, correct? And
yep,
I don't know if
Peyton
you saw
Baker.
That, but like her life goal is to be a journalist. And she goes, so what brought you to be like a, you know, on air and like interview people? And I'm like, it's an oops. Like literally Scott brought me in.
That's the point I'm trying to make. I don't know. Like, I mean, listen, I've got four kids that have gone to college now. I don't know if what they went to college for is going to be their life path. So, I mean, you kind of find it, right?
I went to school for psychology and I'm a venture capitalist.
Right. I mean, you got to make the opportunity. You got to find the opportunity. And it kind of, if you see it, the door opens.
It's, you know, it's funny. Actually, I just had this conversation with somebody. It's a little bit off the beaten path, so I'll keep it short. But if you saw the 85 Bears 30 for 30, this is sort of the moment that like hit me.
I'm 53 years old. I lived the 85 Bears.
Well, of course, yes. The recent 30 for 30.
Richard Dent, MVP. Sup?
Everybody.
He's great. Got him. He's awesome.
But the bottom line was they went through all of the different players. And the unique part was that many of them came from smaller schools. They came from, you know, like even Ditka from Pittsburgh, and he's saying, oh, I'm from I can't remember the name of the town in Pennsylvania right now, but he was saying, no, I went to Pittsburgh to become a dentist because there wasn't a dentist who was going to be in my hometown, so I was going to go back. All these guys had their own little sort of story. Now when you ask kids what they want to go to school, they don't have a clue. Back in the day, you went to college to a specific college.
You had like five options.
Sure.
Well, yeah, of course.
But teacher, dentist, you know,
but you had
like
an idea.
Whatever, doctor.
Right. Of course, yeah. But you kind of knew, like, I'm going to Marquette because I want to be a dentist.
Sure.
You know, like, you knew that.
Right.
Now I feel like people just go to schools and they just kind of offer everything and you have to find your own path. And I think it's actually damaging. It's cool to be able to find your own way, but I feel
Tony, what did you go to school for?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that you asked me that because I grew up in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, broken
Never
family kind of thing.
You called me out for saying rap sheet on the air. That was hilarious.
Well, listen, I got to keep it real, right? Same thing you're doing.
Yeah, but rap sheet is just like just your life story. Like, we just put it in that perspective. It's not necessarily doing things wrong, but fair enough.
Sure.
No felony arrests.
Yeah. Well, in Brooklyn, you don't have the same opportunities I think you have in other places of the world. You know, if your father's a bricklayer, you become a bricklayer.
Sure.
If your father's a doctor, you become a doctor. Yeah. If your father's a hoodlum, you become a hoodlum.
Yeah.
You know, my father wasn't a bricklayer or a doctor. So you were either going to, you know, follow some sort of path or you were going to create your own. So, you know, I chose to.
So
I have a lot more of my mom in me than my father.
What'd you go to school for?
I didn't. I went to John Jay College of Criminal Justice on 59th and 9th to become an attorney.
Okay.
But that didn't work out for me. I only lasted about 3 months.
Okay.
So drove my
let's
car.
Let's talk about
to
your
Chicago.
Turning point. So then, what happened?
So turning point for me, name of the show, right? I don't know if I really want to like. A turning point when you're 18, when I left New York, I was 18 years old. I don't know if that's really like, you're supposed to do things when you're 18, 22, 25 to
unground
change.
Unground yourself 31. And experience.
Yeah, or 31, whatever,
31,
whatever it is.
Make some decisions.
Well, a relatively young age, you know, you're supposed
31.
To make life changes that are going to define you. But being in my 50s now, being 53, you know, you get to a point like I was a trainer on the floor of the SIBO from 1980 to 2005.
Can you say what got you to that floor?
I had a cousin, you know, like a friend and family who was a trader on the floor.
So he got here. Clerk or runner when you first started?
That's correct. Started making $600 a month in 1980 when I finally became a trader. Before I became a trader, I was making $1,200.
Scott wasn't born yet, just what?
That's right. That's right. Probably most of the people listening weren't born yet. You know, making
$1,200
a month.
I hope some people that are listening were born.
This is WGN. Most of these people are older than all of us combined. Are you kidding me?
That's a good point, too. That's a good point, too.
Please continue. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. No,
we like banter.
I started trading, you know, all I wanted to do was make a small amount of money per day.
Well, you knew you can do it, right? You believed in yourself enough to know that
Well, it took me 3 years to save $5,000 to start trading, which you can't do anymore as a trader. Like, you know, you need $1 million or $500,000 or some large number that most people can't get to when they have the young drive. But my turning point for me really wasn't that opportunity, because I think everybody has that opportunity because you're young. You have no wife, you have no kids, you got no husband, you got no family, you don't have any responsibilities. So take all the risks that you can. My turning point for me was when I was in my, you know, was in my 40s, when the SIBO and the border trade was basically going away for the floor trader. And now you find yourself, you know, with a house in Glencoe and 2.5 dogs and 2.5 children, and you have all these other responsibilities. Now what are you going to do when your business goes? So for me, my turning point was actually leveraging friends and family, old trader friends that I've known for 30 years, and trying to reinvent myself. Like what skill did I have? All I did was yell and scream. Try to make money. Amber, you know about this.
Yeah,
you
I mean, I'm listening to you going, I left the trading floor in 2006. I've always been divinely guided. And I think
the same year,
like,
five,
like,
six.
Yeah, right. And so I knew that the floor was going, but I also knew that the financial floor was going before I went into the ag room. But I also like the hours in the ags better than I did in the financial
room. Well, what'd you guys end
so
at 1 o'clock
or something
like
that? So
for anyone
that doesn't know, so the financial room was 6:30 in the morning until like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and the ags was 9:30 in the morning.
Better hours.
Ags 9:30 like, morning, 9:45.
Yeah,
but
unless
opening
you, like,
rotation,
get a check,
closing
and
rotation,
stuff, and right, not allowed to swear. So yes, and so fast forward, like whatever. So I've always been divinely guided. So they knew, like when I knew that all the people that were in the financial room knew how to use technology, but people in the ags did not because it was like older traders.
School.
Yeah, it's old school. And so then I went into that room, and then I became a trader in like a year after that. I mean, I just like believed in myself and kind of said X, Y, and Z to some people that told me that I couldn't do it. And we already talked about that before. And so,
But you watched and you learned, right? I mean, like,
I'm disgustingly observant.
Well, that's the only, I don't think it's not the only way. I think in practical application, the best way to learn is practical application.
Like, you have to get thrown into the fire. Otherwise, I feel like, you know, like all this school stuff. Like,
you learn by doing.
Yeah. I don't think use.
School's great. No, it's great.
It teaches you
how to grow.
Yes, it has its place.
It teaches you discipline to a point, and then
I think schools give you the opportunity to have an access point in and out of different circles professionally, but schools also put you in a position where if you so choose to learn about these things and these things and these things, you can, but the application of it, you can't apply it. That's why they say entrepreneurial programs in schools are a challenge, because you got to do it.
I'm going to put a little bit of a different spin on it, because I didn't go to school, and I think I want to make the point for going
let's
to school.
Go. You're just getting
I'm trying to, I'm
because
trying,
the game's behind
yeah,
you.
Yeah, getting blitzed.
You're like, let's go. We're 16-5. That's great.
I couldn't take it to a different level because I didn't have the knowledge that I think schooling would have given me as a trader. What I mean is I became a very successful, whatever success means.
Yeah, sure.
One person's floor is another person's ceiling. Yeah. So success is however you manage it, however you measure it.
I really like that quote.
Well, thank
one
you.
Person's
I don't think I made it. I think I've heard it
somewhere. No, but I like that, though.
Well,
I think that
yours.
That's
okay, thanks. I mean,
really
anybody who's listening probably hasn't heard it. But I never took it to a different level. Like, I didn't have the skill set that I think schooling would have given me to make my business, which was just a one person standing on the floor yelling and screaming with a couple of clerks to help me, to make a business of saying, hey, let me get, you know, two or three more traders, or let me teach other people how to do it so that they can excel and then I can monetize them. Where my business partner, Tom Sosnoff, he had that type of upbringing or that kind of knowledge.
But you did do that with your cousins, you said.
Yes,
you
did.
Yeah, you had them as your
clerks. But it's a big difference between
I follow what you're saying, and I totally agree. I think actually, I guess the best way to put it is
listen, Tom built a $750, he ended up selling it for a $750 million firm in Thinkorswim to TD Ameritrade.
Yeah.
I didn't have that kind of knowledge to make that. I had enough to make, you know, BAT Enterprises myself much more than any of my family could have ever dreamed for my hopes.
All right, hold on a second.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
That's, I know, you know, look at this face.
I can
so
see that.
That's awesome that
yes.
Tom did that. And
yes.
That's amazing because he's a very humble individual and that's
sure,
great.
Sure.
But it doesn't differentiate you.
It was a publicly traded company.
How,
it wasn't all his money.
I
mean,
of course,
yes.
Yeah. It doesn't differentiate you on how amazing you are.
Oh, no, no.
Right, like
100%.
You've had awesome
an amazing
successes.
Run. For sure.
Okay, but so but that's what I want
to... But you have to put yourself in those opportunities.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
You know, in 1980s...
How did you guys meet?
We met on the floor, on the trading floor.
Okay, and you guys were trading what?
At the CBOE, we were trading the OEX, which is the S&P 100, as opposed to now everybody trades the S&P 500.
500, right.
So we met on the floor. I mean, you talk about, like, relationships, like floor traders or, you know... out to get each other. There's so much camaraderie on the floor.
And that was, which totally, I can say sucked.
It's a misconception.
Which totally sucked when you became a screen trader, which I was. And, like, there's nothing. You're literally, like, right and left clicking all day long. And, like, you're looking at 17 screens and you're just, it just isn't fun.
Yeah. So I bought my first seat in 1987, the day of the crash.
Nice.
And I thought, well, no, it wasn't. $260,000 for the seat. The next trade, well, that was all the money.
That's a good trade.
Well, at the time they leveraged you half, so I only had to come up with like 100. Yes.
Okay.
I only had to come up with 130 grand, which was all the money I had had, and I had been trading for, you know, about 2 years or so. It was all the money I had. Yeah. The next morning, the day of the crash, the next print on the seats were 190 grand.
Yeah.
So
you already had an uptick. Nice.
In 3 months, that seat had doubled after the crash. Mm-hmm. But you got to remember something. Everything we thought was going, you know, to hell in a handbasket, it was going to be all gone. So it was good timing, but you had to be in that situation, and then you had to take the risk too.
Yeah.
Can I touch on something really quick? I have a question for you, Tony. You've had a very fruitful career in your life.
But it ended in 2006, 2005.
But I want to allow you to have the platform to inspire people to say, like, what it felt inside of yourself to make the change to
Scary.
Go ahead.
So 2005, 2006, like I was getting to a little bit earlier, you have all these responsibilities. So many people, you know, depending on you. And now...
Like a normal entrepreneur.
Like
CEO,
a normal entrepreneur. You go out into the workforce, you know... A 40-year-old male with responsibilities, they may think you're worth X that you want to be paid, but they can't afford to pay you. So you either have to start your own kind of business or reinvent somebody else's.
Yeah.
That's a very difficult thing.
And then that's race to market. And so.
Absolutely. So for me, I think the turning point for me was I realized that I could connect with people. It's something that they don't know anything about. Like, I don't know what the quote is. I was reading the paper the other day. Like, 75 million people play fantasy football. I know you're watching Northwestern game. But they play.
Wait,
they play.
What is that?
No,
I don't mean to say
million.
Stupid.
75
but, like,
million?
What is that, like, stupid ad that they have during fantasy football? That's like, you can make $2 million
if
you bet.
Yeah. If you have an algorithm to...
well, everybody sells them. Well, everybody. My point is, everybody has access to all those statistics.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I don't have to know what the top 10 quarterbacks are.
Yeah.
I can go online and look. And if we were all picking our fantasy football team, you'd pick the number one or two quarterback.
Then I'd pick the cuter quarterback.
Or the cuter one, but he'd be in the top three. You're not going to go rogue.
We don't slum here on this,
right.
this studio.
But you can all see that. It's the same thing now with online trading. You have so many different
opportunities,
vehicles, but you don't know how to read them.
Yeah. Well, I was a spreader, so I'm actually pretty good at, like, butterflies and stuff like that, but sure.
So think about what a butterfly spread is.
Right.
It's a defined risk trade that has a limited amount of capital up front.
Plus, I'm already spreading in general because I'm a crusher, but yes.
But with a higher potential for profit on a lower...
Based off of slippage.
Yes, based on slippage. But you have to learn how to do that. Now,
right.
You just used butterfly, slippage, crush, I think you mentioned. Yeah. Those are all words that everybody who's talking, who's listening to us right now, the majority of them don't know what it means.
You're right. That's fair.
So what we try to do at Tasty Trade is give them those statistical, like I don't care, like if they don't never know what a butterfly is, mm-hmm. I don't care. But if I tell them, and I'll put it very, very in simple terms, hey, you know, you can risk $20 to make $80, but you only have a 20% chance of profit. You might say, okay, well, I'm willing to do that. I know statistically I'm probably not going to make any money. I might lose all of it. But I know what my risk is. I know what my gain is. Mm-hmm. If I told you that you can risk $70, risk more, to only make $30, and that's your defined risk for 40 days.
Yep.
But you have a 70% probability of success. Now you might say, okay, I'm picking that quarterback who's 1, 2, or 3. Can he break his leg? Sure. Can he be out for the season?
Yeah, there's obviously
sure.
risk no matter what.
There's always risk, but statistically
you're giving opportunity
speaking,
for the higher probability.
You're not
of
picking the 10th quarterback
risk.
With the third
yep.
pick.
Right.
You're picking 1, 2, 3, or 4 mm-hmm. quarterback with the third pick.
Yeah,
that's what we try to show people.
So that's the objective of Tasty Trade.
It is to really here. You have
what influenced you guys to start bootstrapping in America? So that was a show that I was on, I think, in January,
something
beginning
like
of January.
That, yeah.
So.
And the ratings soared.
You guys are, I mean, honestly, like, I feel like we're sitting with a legend right now, to be honest with you.
you're making me, I'm humbled, but.
That's not the soul. You know, as you asked the question about what Tasty Trade is, she has asked you what your turning point is like 3 times on this particular episode and feels like maybe she's not getting the right answer. I think you answered it, at least in my mind.
Right
you
now,
you just answered it a second
yes.
ago. Because here's the thing, you brought up the point about education and how you felt like that was something you were lacking. The one thing, if I could have gone back and had it differently, mm-hmm. would be that I had this education and I was able to, you know, make the right line. So now that you've kind of gotten as far as you have Tasty Trade and you have a platform.
Bootstrapping, and he's got like
you've
17,
got a platform to educate everybody.
17 other shows underneath.
To give people what you were lacking or what
yep.
you felt
that's
you
correct.
Were lacking. And that's that ultimately the turning point is like it went full circle. I did it, but I didn't work
you finally answered it, Tony.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I think Scott actually helped me connect the dots.
Because I mean, it is reality though. I mean, we all, I think, when you find success, particularly if you have to work really, really, really hard, if you don't come from, you know, means or whatever the mm-hmm. situation is, you go through it and you're like, wow, I finally got to the top.
You don't know when to turn off the hustle.
That, but I think you also want to go back and help people that you think are genuinely. Not just everyone, but genuinely, you see yourself in them. It's like, what can I do to get you there quicker than
I had to
do?
We are. I don't care what you think about this nation, but we're the greatest, smartest nation in my eyes.
Yeah.
As long as you give somebody the opportunity to learn. Now, usually what happens is it's out of everybody's reach. You know, I put 4 kids through college. You know, it's $100,000. We're so willing to give that money to a college to help our child. And then when they come out, I don't know if they're prepared for the world to work. Like, you can't tell me that $100,000 on an education to go get a $40,000 job is a good math model.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't.
No, yeah, obviously.
It doesn't work. So we have to kind of, you get
that job. Or
200
and start your own job with no money. That's another option.
That's what Scott did.
If I could tell your audience of millennials right now, like, you have most people tell you, like don't do what we did.
Yeah.
And don't do what I think our parents did. You know, you got a job and you opened up an IRA account and you put this money away because it was tax-free. You saved $1,500.
I think it was also, like, fear inflicted, right? Like, there was like, oh, you need to save, you need to do this just in case. Like, you know, I think we're a little bit more loose these days.
I want you to be more than loose. I don't want you to open up an IRA account. I want you to take that $4,000 or $5,000 and make a trade.
Mm-hmm.
Risk $30. Risk $70 to make $30. There's so much more in the power of learning.
Yeah.
I'm not saying take your 401k.
Yeah.
I'm saying take that. Like, I have a 25-year-old son. He says, Dad, I want to open up an IRA account. I said, don't open up an IRA account. Take that $4,000 and blow it. Like, you can lose it. Like, $4,000.
You want a dad like
that. I think Jordan Belfort said that once.
Oh, seriously?
Well, he's a crook, so he put the money in his own pocket. But
right.
Yeah.
No.
I want you to do it yourself.
No, to learn. The education on doing. Listen, you may surprise yourself.
The
you might actually make money.
Education on losing something for a second.
But you might actually win. Like, we don't take the time as a nation to learn. We want somebody else to do it for us. I want you to learn. So then at least you can know if somebody who you do hire eventually when you have $4 million or $400,000 or $40,000, you know that that person that you're hiring to help you is at least doing an adequate job.
You know
Most
what?
Of us have no idea.
I would say being on the trading floor as you have been, you would have just been a hot mess on the trading floor. I love you.
But you
learn so much about who you are as an individual, what your tolerance is, and how much you can handle in a certain point. Like, it's not even normal. So that I agree with what you're saying. It's not abnormal to me to think, just risk it.
Sure. Well, listen,
what do you have to lose? You're breathing.
Sure. I mean, listen, I mean, my first paycheck was in 2006 or seven when I went to go work for Thinkorswim.
Okay.
But from the time I was, 21 years old. Most people always have a paycheck. They always rely on that. So taking risk for me might have been a little bit different than everybody else, but it's not like, Cowboys and Indians risk. It's calculated risk. It's defined risk if you want to get back to your butterfly trade. You got to just kind of, I think you got to challenge yourself.
I think everyone needs to do that. Yeah.
We have to close up soon, but if you could give an analogy about what you did in trading to how people can make it applicable to their daily life, what would you say your one or two liner would be?
Volatility is overstated, meaning the chances you're going to take, the thought process, the downfall is so much less than what you think. It's not as horrible. The bus is going to come the next morning. The sun is going to eventually shine. It's not like I have to be successful today or tomorrow because I'm taking all this risk. Even if it doesn't work, it's still going to be all right.
Well, it's like they say, right, about worrying. I mean, don't stress and worry all the time because 90% of the time, all the stuff you're thinking about never comes through.
Exactly. Volatility is overstated.
Great words of advice.
Cool.
Thank you so much, Tony, for dropping by.
Appreciate it. This was fun.
And
this was great. Tables turn, man.
I'm sitting here kind of listening.
He actually started interviewing at first and then realized that he was actually in the seat.
It's I'll just chill here and listen to y'all for a while. This is great.
Sweet. Thanks.
Where do people go to catch Tasty Trade and all the other stuff you're going? Plug away, man.
TastyTrade.com. It's completely free. Check us out. 8 hours of live programming a day, Monday through Friday. And everything's
archived. We should let him say his catchphrase at the end.
Well, we can do that. As long as the people go to Taste It and then come back to our show, that's all.
Right,
make sure they go back to our website.
Hyperlink.
This is all about you guys. I thank you so much for having me, I'm humbled by your kind words.
No, great, man.
After I do my little thing here, we're going to have it close up with you doing
with
your hook.
Yep.
You can watch this episode and more on Advisor TV, stream us on the WGN Plus app, or download each episode on iTunes, and remember to stay connected by following us on Twitter at WGN Turning Point.
No, I can't do
it. Yeah, you gotta
do
it.
No, this is all about you.
No, what's your rap? Do it. 3, 2, 1.
No, I can't.
He's not gonna do it.
Thank you so much, Pam. You guys are sweet.